This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the very first day of May 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Mike actually is also one of our guests on Commodity Week, which comes up immediately after this program on our home radio station and on many of these other radio stations over the weekend. That's up on our website at willag.org. Steve Freed, Ellen Dearden, and Dale Durkles also on the panel for Commodity Week today. So stay with us if you can on our home station. During the closing market report today, we'll also talk about the weather forecast. That'll come up with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey. And Ben Pruce of the Andersons will be here to take up the cash grain market and what's been happening in north central Iowa. All happens on this Friday edition of the closing market report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look at the numbers as they settled up in Chicago. For a Friday afternoon, futures in the corn pit were down 2¾ cents. July down 3¼. The May contract, by the way, at 359¾. July at 363. September at 369¾. It was down 3. December at 380¼. Down 3¼. And the March contract at 391½. Down 3¼ cents. May beans in the soy complex at $9.68½. Down a dime. July at 964¾, 11¼ lower. August 959, 12 cents lower. September at 946¾, down 12. And November beans down 11½ cents today at $9.40¾. May wheat futures were up 3 cents at 470. July at 474 were unchanged. July hard red at $5.50, a penny and a half higher. Bean meal in the products at 314.70, down 420 in the bean oil, 7 cents lower. We're at 31.44. Live cattle futures from the CME finished June at 149.40, down 30 cents. August at 147.97½. 12½ lower. The feeder cattle in the May contract at 213.52½, up 55. August at 215¼, 35 cents higher for the day. And the lean hogs on the afternoon at $76.30 per 100 pounds finished 65 cents lower for the day. Of course, you're listening to the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. Our Commodity Week program has already been posted there. WILLAG.org.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
Crude oil futures in the outside markets for the June contract at $59.17 a barrel today, down 46 cents at this hour. The heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.98 2¢ is about 0.2 cents higher. Gasoline on the RBOB price for the afternoon at $2.04 3¢ is 0.1 cent lower. Natural gas trading $2.77 6¢ up 2½ cents. Ethanol futures, the last trade there. And the final trade for the day at $1.60 7¢, a penny and 0.2 cents lower. Dow Jones Industrial Average about 172 points higher at 17,931. Gold around $9.50 lower at $1,173. And the dollar index at 95.43. That's up 0.716 on the afternoon. The weather forecast from the National Weather Service says the Urbana-Champaign area will see sunny skies today. It's beautiful outside. Just a northwest wind, light at 3 to 5 miles an hour, near 69 degrees tonight, cloudy, a low of 49, again light west winds, and then tomorrow sunny skies, beautiful day, all the way up to 75, light southwest winds, they'll increase to 5 to 9 in the morning, and then Saturday evening, partly cloudy, and a low of 53 degrees, Sunday, mostly sunny and 78, Sunday night, cloudy and 59, Monday, 50% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms in the area, mostly cloudy and a high of 78 degrees, Monday night, showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy and a low of 60. And on Tuesday, again, chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny and 79.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
It is a Friday afternoon, the very first day of May. On the phone line is Mike Zuzulo. He's commodity analyst and broker out of Atchison, Kansas, with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Mike, thanks for taking the time with us. I know you were on yesterday afternoon when we recorded Commodity Week. That'll come up here on our program and other radio stations either later this afternoon, immediately following this program on the host home station and other stations over the weekend. It was a really good show. However, the marketplace, especially the beans, gave us something to think about that was not really completely different, but certainly probably put a little kink in the charts for the day. Tell me about the downturn.
Yeah, I mean, we started out this week kind of similar and ended this week kind of similar. A familiar pattern is starting to show up here in the course of the month of April. You know, we saw on a weekly basis, Todd, the wheat lead the show to the downside, down 3%. In new crop, followed by corn down 2%, beans in the new crop down a little over 1%. Beans had the early week pop on more strike potential and supply disruptions, but that gave way to fresh avian flu concerns and resistance technically being hit and not being able to get above late in the week, and then all of a sudden we started to see another increase in Argentina's bean production number from the Buenos Aires Grains Exchange. And so the end of the week, the beans, you know, tended to follow the corn and the wheat, and that seems to be the pattern. The pattern has been that the spread traders, the funds, have been not too eager to sell the beans, and so they've been mainly long beans and long meal against short corn and short wheat in the beginning of the week. But by midweek, if technicals aren't violated or something new comes up to make them want to get out, then they unwind that spread. And I think that's just, we've seen more of the same this past week that as what we've seen, you know, throughout the month. Now, on a monthly basis, as we talk about in Commodity Week, we, you know, have made, I think, some strides, some positive strides in the commodity complex.
Tell me a bit those about. I'm sorry. Tell me a bit about those. I was thinking about those monthlies and what they look like. What do they mean to the marketplace? And in particular, do they mean something different in the current era with black box trading as to previous times?
Well, I think they are magnified by the black box traders, and the black box traders, I think, take up more of a percentage of the trading volume on a daily basis, and they pick certain commodities or commodity groups that are utilized and traded more aggressively from what I can tell on the research I've done. I think what you see this week in the month of April as a whole, if you can look at both of them and see any similarities, I think in the month of April you saw a very strong turnaround in the crude oil, in the natural gas. The natural gas for lead month futures was able to get above its 200-day moving average for the first time since July 2014. Meanwhile, the ag commodities remained depressed and mostly on the sell side, or the shorts didn't want to cover. And I think this goes back to some of the supply-demand fundamentals of the demand, of the avian flu, of the corn planting progress. But in the midst of all that, we did see a break in the dollar. Now, we haven't closed up here for the week, but on a monthly chart, the dollar looks like a medium-term sell signal after Thursday's close. I hope that follows through on a weekly basis here this afternoon, and we stay below 95.50 in the June dollar index. If that can be seen, then you can start to see the commodity indices, the CRB, the Goldman Sachs commodity index, and also the Bloomberg commodity index, those three all starting to show a buy signal on their oscillators on a monthly basis. And it's been quite a while since we've seen that. So we are seeing some daylight at the end of the tunnel, and that came at the heels of poor GDP, poor consumer spending, poor business investment spending numbers this week, all key indicators that say maybe the dollar is not as robust as we think it should be because the U.S. economy is starting to slow as a result in part of this stronger dollar. So maybe the wheels are starting to turn here, and it puts us still on track for a 2010 type market in my view in terms of to keep watching for.
You're situated near the northeastern corner of Kansas, northwestern corner of Missouri. What are conditions on the ground like today?
We are a lot like western Illinois. The corn planting is mostly done. I'm starting to see bean planters being dropped in the fields as of yesterday afternoon. We're similar in terms of both planting progress because we're kind of similar in terms of moisture. We're pretty dry right now, and talked to some western Illinois guys near Springfield, west of Springfield today, and they're really wanting a rain, which is not odd this time of year. They seem to start out dry, and then the month of May usually blesses them pretty nicely with some rain. So a lot different here and in western Illinois than people like in eastern Missouri, where they're still trying to dry out, while northern Indiana, clients up there are starting to finish up. Central Indiana, clients are just starting to get ramped up for this weekend, kind of similar to Kentucky. And then when I talked to my Tennessee people this week, the West Tennessee people have made the decision to move to either Milo or soybeans at this point because they've just missed that corn window since this was the last week of April.
Are your expectations for rainfall next week in the area there?
There are expectations, but one thing that we saw the maps do again today that we've seen a trend develop is that the hard red wheat belt and us here on the western corn belt, the precip totals are starting to be pulled back. The noontime models pulled almost all the rain for this weekend, whereas several days ago we had 20 to 40% chance on today, Saturday, and Sunday. Now we're looking at only 10 to 20% chance and probably less than a half an inch by the time we get around to Monday morning. So this wheat quality tour and crop tour that the Kansas Wheat Council will be putting in boots on the ground on Monday, this will be very important because not only will they get an idea of how the crop looks right now, but they'll also see exactly how much rain they're getting out there and see if that, you know, is going to do any good or not.
Hey, thanks so much, and we do appreciate you taking the time with us.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend, sir.
You too. That, of course, Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting joins us on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In today's agricultural news, another poultry farm in Iowa has tested positive initially for the H5N2 version of avian influenza. The flock is just 19,000 birds. That's small by comparison. However, it is unique as potentially the first broiler breeding farm to be infected. Breedstock farms exercise high levels of biosecurity, and this breach, if that is truly the case, would be very concerning to the industry. From Iowa, we go to Washington, D.C., where Congress again is debating a new budget on the heels of the White House proposing new limits on preventing plant payments in its fiscal year 2016 budget. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack says there's always a risk that if you open up any part of the farm bill, you open all of it. But the memory of the struggle to get the farm bill done should be enough, he thinks, to keep the farm bill off limits. The debate over prevented plantings is just one part of the bigger fight over agricultural subsidies. Farm state lawmakers contend growers need to be protected from forces beyond their control, but opponents say taxpayers should not be footing the bill for expensive subsidies for big businesses that don't need it. Here's how U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack views the issue.
Whether they tinker around the edges, obviously, it depends on what numbers, what commands they're given relative to the budget, which gets back to my point, which is that in the past, what they've done is they haven't reopened the big programs. They've basically said, oh, you know, ag can find a percent here or 2% here or 5% here, no problem. It won't. Well, 1 year or 2 years of that, but 6 years of that, it accumulates. I mean, if you think of boss comes in and says, well, if you can just nick off a percent or two from your budget, it would be helpful to us. Well, you can do that 1 or 2 years, but you do it 6 years, you have sequester on top of it, it begins to take its toll. And this department does really good work and has done a very good job of instituting this farm bill. We wouldn't want to jeopardize that momentum by too much radical review of what we fought so hard to get just a year or so ago.
That's Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. South Dakota Senator John Thune says the number of prevented planting claims should drop in coming years because of new conservation compliance requirements. From D.C., we come back to the Midwest. Monsanto has been talking with Syngenta about possibly buying the Swiss-based company. The two companies had discussed a merger last year, but Syngenta backed away from Monsanto's offers. Apparently, the talks have resumed. And finally, the world's largest producer of potash and other fertilizers, all primary plant nutrients, has reported a less-than-expected profit. Potash Corporation says its first-quarter profits were up 8.7%. The $370 million, or 44 cents per share, increase missed the company's target by at least a penny a share and as much as 11 cents. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Something a little lighter for the afternoon. You know, more than 120 students will graduate from the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine right here on this campus in just 2 weeks. A dozen of those students, however, are getting some hands-on training right now at the Prairie Wildlife Park near Peoria, that before they walk across the stage. Alex Ruciano observed one health session with a somewhat larger-than-normal patient.
Deep into Wildlife Prairie Park, several vet students are working on Molly. Molly, who's heavily sedated, is one of two North American black bears at the park, and she's getting a head-to-paw inspection, including blood work, a dental exam, and a heart check. Mary Roberg is one of those students helping take samples, gently rolling Molly over, and taking readings.
Inspecting their paws and their limbs themselves, it's always way more impressive up close to see those features on a bear.
But the students don't stop at one animal. They've been working and living at Wildlife Prairie Park for nearly 2 weeks, treating cougars, birds, and otters.
One, two, three.
Dr. Matt Allender is supervising the U of I vet students during Molly's checkup. He says the on-location training with such a variety of animals is an unusual opportunity for students getting ready to go professional.
They're going to walk across the stage second weekend in May, and they're going to be doctors and going to be licensed and out practicing. So these guys are ready. These guys are here. And again, to get this at this point of their career in this intensive is pretty unusual and pretty unique. It's quite amazing.
The U of I Vet School has administered annual herd animal checkups for years. That includes the elk and bison at the park. Wildlife Prairie pays $10,000 for the students' housing and supplies during their two-week stay in the new program. Park Director Doug Dillo says the new partnership is worth the price because it yields valuable health information on the park's resident wildlife.
Now we have data. We will have a baseline that we can provide, and this says, at this point in time, this is what the condition was, and then they can assess from there, and so it is a big support.
Dillo says the program is completely privately funded since a not-for-profit group took over state control of the park last year. He says the private revenue is reliable in a time that state parks are vulnerable to looming state budget cuts. This program is the first time that non-herd animals are getting annual health inspections as opposed to on an as-needed basis at Wildlife Prairie Park. Dr. Julia Whittington is an associate professor at the U of I Vet School. She says the main goal is to shift away from reactive medicine.
Every animal, including humans, need health assessments. And historically, veterinary medicine has focused on vaccination health. And vaccinations are absolutely important, but more important is preventative medicine. If we can get health assessments on these animals before they have a problem, then we're able to provide them with significant benefit for their entire life. We can make their lives healthier.
Whittington says one common concern for animals in captivity is that they don't burn off as many calories compared to living in the wild.
More hair on the back of your feet.
Yeah.
As for Molly the bear, Dr. Allender says she's looking good, but a little overweight compared to her free-roaming relatives.
A normal North American black bear in the wild is probably about 120 pounds, female, and she's pushing 400.
Allender says when Molly wakes up, park staff will use the new data to plan out nutrition and long-term health planning.
Americanus or Ursus.
I'm Alex Ruciano.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Hey, you know, the corn planters are rolling really quickly across the Midwest, and this has farmers in competition with some of their herbicide retailer applicators. They've been racing one another across the fields, and sometimes the farmers are winning. University of Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager has this advice for farmers wondering what they should do if their corn got planted before the residual herbicides were applied.
We do have corn that has emerged in parts of Illinois, so the question we often get at this time of year, if I had planned to use a residual herbicide but I didn't get it sprayed until after the corn has come up out of the ground, can I still make that application? And the simple answer is it really depends on the herbicide, because most, the vast majority of herbicides that we do use as soil-applied residual products in the state can actually be applied after the corn has emerged. There are some that cannot be. Products that come to mind would be something like Balance Pro or Radius. Prequel would be a third one. They all contain isoxaflutol, and an unsafe form that can be very, very injurious if it's actually sprayed on emerged corn. Things that have safe flufenacil, the active ingredient of Sharpen and Verdict, would also be another active ingredient that has to be applied before the corn begins to emerge. Many of the other residual type products can be applied after the corn begins to come out of the ground. The question then becomes, well, how tall can the corn be? Are there size restrictions on when some of these residual herbicides can be applied? And for most of these, there are size restrictions. However, they tend to be fairly generous in terms of corn size. So the best recommendation, if you have a product in this scenario that hasn't been applied yet and the corn's out of the ground, if it's one of the product's active ingredients that cannot be applied, we have to switch you to something else. If it still can be, simply consult a label to make sure that you get the application done by the corn size restriction listed on the label.
That, of course, is Aaron Hager. He's an extension weed scientist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. If you'd like to read more from him, you can do that on the Bulletin website. Search Google for Bulletin and Illinois. That's Bulletin, Illinois, and you should find the Bulletin website from the University of Illinois. On the phone line now to take up the cash grain market with us is Ben Pruess. He's at the Anderson's facility out of Everly, Iowa. Thanks, Ben, for being with us. Producers moving in the field there today?
No, actually not today. We had a nice little rain system blow through here for us, but we have been hard at it here all week. We've had 70 degrees, blue skies, mellow dirt, and most guys conservatively in our neck of the woods were 65-75 to almost 85% planted on corn, and guys are rolling right into beans. So
oh my gosh,
right along here.
You must have put 60% of your crop in the last week.
Yeah, but we literally from last Sunday through the rain here this morning, we literally have had ideal conditions. Most guys that I have talked to are done. And if not, they're well north of 50% done with corn.
Your quick review of the marketplace and how conditions are on the ground for basis.
The board obviously continuing to sag. You know, at the market's aware that we're getting planted. Bean complex feels incredibly heavy here today. We continue to encourage people to just be locking hedges, sell it, and defend it, is the phrase we use. Basis is continuing to, they're having to firm up at the end users, corn specifically. Corn just simply isn't moving due to the time of year and price. And we're having a little bit of interesting dynamic going on with the chicken scare here in Northwest Iowa, but our basis continues to hold for the time being. And like I said, we're just continuing to scale and encouraging people to scale into sales and just stay in front of it here.
And your bids for the day?
339 cash corn, 928 cash beans.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's Ben Pruess. He's with the Anderson's facility out of Everly, Iowa. Joins us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Make sure you stay with us. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We'll talk about the weather forecast with Jim Angel. He's at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's May Day. The holiday has ancient origins dating back to pre-Christian Europe, but May Day may be best known for its tradition of dancing around the maypole. By the way, the early American colony of Marymount, founded by Thomas Morton, outraged its Puritan neighbors by setting up a maypole and drinking and dancing around it for several days at a time. On this day in agricultural history in 1839, Hilary Chardonnet was born. A French chemist and industrialist, Chardonnet was responsible for the development of rayon, which was first displayed at the Paris Exposition of 1891. The new material caused a sensation, and eventually he opened factories for manufacturing rayon out of mulberry leaves. In 1924, the first iodine table salt went on sale in the U.S. at groceries in Michigan. Diamond Crystal Salt and four other Michigan table salt companies agreed to add the trace of iodine to reduce incidences of goiter. Later in the year, Morton Salt supplied the national market with iodinated salt. And in 1991, Charles Elton died. Elton was an English biologist who in 1927 first developed the idea of a food chain. Elton described the way plants get energy from sunlight, plant-eating animals get their energy from eating plants, and meat-eating animals get their energy from eating other animals. Elton created the Bureau of Animal Population at Oxford, England, which was a mecca for ecologists from around the world. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This agricultural programming is a production of Illinois Public Media based here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You may find all of our programming online at willag.org. That's willag.org. We post the programming there not long after it airs on our radio stations, from the opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between, each and every business day of the year. It's there at willag.org, including Commodity Week, our weekly look at the world of commodity agriculture. State climatologist Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute now joins us with a look at the weekend weather forecast for the state of Illinois and how it's related to the farm and agriculture.
The statewide average temperature for April was 54.1 degrees. That's 1.7 degrees above average. April precipitation was in the range of 2 to 4 inches in northern and central Illinois and 4 to 7 inches in southern Illinois. As a result, the northern two-thirds of the state was slightly below average, while the southern third was up to 2 inches above average. According to the Water Survey Soil Temperature Network, 2 and 4 inch bare soil temperatures are ranging from the upper 40s in far northern Illinois to the upper 50s in far southern Illinois. That's an increase of about 8 degrees from last week. According to the National Weather Service, temperatures are expected to be above average for the next 2 weeks. Highs on Saturday will range from the mid-70s across Illinois. Highs on Sunday will be close to the 80 degrees. For the rest of the week, highs will remain in the upper 70s and low 80s south of Interstate 80. They will be in the upper 60s and low 70s north of Interstate 80. Overnight lows will be in the 50s and low 60s for the week. There is a 50 to 70% chance of rain on Monday, Tuesday, and on into Wednesday for the northern half of the state, and a more general 20 to 40% chance of rain across the state on Thursday. Possible rainfall totals for the week range from 1 to 2 inches in far northern Illinois to only about a tenth of an inch in far southern Illinois. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Our thanks go to Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, for his update of the weekend weather forecast for the state of Illinois. You can find Jim and all of the rest of our meteorologists online at willag.org. There are four others posted there each and every business day of the year. Again, the address, willag.org. Thank you.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.